This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio or at venues around the city, and we get to listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and to find your next favorite artist or band. And of course, if you like what you hear, please make sure that you rate and review the show so that other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Nation of Language. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Alisa Ali at WFUV. Alisa, this is a special episode. Normally, we drop episodes on Mondays, but we loved this session so much, we rushed to get it out before the end of the year. You've talked to Nation of Language before. They live in Brooklyn. They're our New York City neighbors. Talk to me about catching up with them and this session and this latest project that they have out with Sub Pop Records.
Yeah, it's such a fun record, which is so ironic because the songs on it, if you listen to it lyrically, it's not really fun. It comes from kind of a sad place, but a lot of times you got to dance through the emotions.
You do.
You know, and that is what this album really helps us do. It's an album filled with songs that really get in your head. And that is one of the great songs on this record, too. But we wanted to rush and get this one out because as we come to the end of the year, we've been thinking about what our favorite songs are and what our favorite albums are. And truly one of my favorites from the year that I really just could not get out of my head was by Nation of Language, and it was Inept Apollo. And we asked if they would do it, and they were so lovely and charming to talk to. And they did a great version of it. And we're going to listen to it right now on WFUV in Studio A.
Let it be, let it go. There's little left to follow. Someone said that I won't. In the morning glow, embraced and left alone. How many miles ago? Unbreak the spell. Still remember how it was for. Miles ago, I break the spell.
Nation of Language live in Studio A with a live performance of their song Inept Apollo. That is from their fourth full-length release, Dance Called Memory. I'm Elise Ali with WFUV here in the Bronx, and I've got the Brooklyn Trio with me today. Ian, Aiden, and Alex, thank you so much for joining us here in Studio A and making the big trek from BK to BX. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was a big one, you know, really, really took it out of us.
I mean, it's no joke. It really does take a while to get here.
I guess that's true. Sometimes I feel like it takes a while to get everywhere.
It's very true. But
especially the Bronx. I think I could probably get to Philly faster than I can get to the Bronx.
This is what I'm saying. Some people are like, where are you right now? But anyway, I'm so glad that you're with us today. Congrats on your new album and thank you for making it. It has been an absolute joy to listen to and an even better experience to watch you guys play it live. So listeners out there, catch them if you can on tour. The song that we just heard, Inept Apollo, is so great. I've been playing a lot on the radio and it may be, I'm not just saying this, it may be one of my favorite songs of the year. It's so good for me, and I think for a lot of listeners. And Ian, you're so humble calling yourself an inept Apollo. I mean, clearly you're quite skilled and more than capable. But I get that, you know, it's probably a common anxiety with musicians thinking like, oh, I can't do this thing.
Yeah, I mean, the song is really kind of based on this feeling of, you know, for me, like music is the thing that I can turn to when I am feeling, you know, depressed or powerless or what have you. And it's, you know, a place to put my energy. But there is also this inescapable imposter syndrome. And so you're like, this is the only outlet I have. And I'm not even very good at it. And so this sort of crisis of like, I guess I'll just keep going because I don't know how to use any other, I don't have any other tools at my disposal. Yeah, Apollo being, you know, the god of art and music and all of that. So it is, yeah, it is both self-aggrandizing and self-deprecating at the same time, I guess.
Can you guys talk a little bit about imposter syndrome? Like, do you have that as well in different periods? I would assume that when you're creating, that's probably when it hits the hardest, right? When you're trying to make something from nothing. And then I'm thinking that maybe once it's made, you're like, oof, it maybe dissipates a little bit.
I don't know. I think for me, actually, the making is the most natural process. And then I think it's almost like the showing everybody is the part where, because like when I'm making it, I'm just in the zone. Exactly. But then you're like, oh, well, I clearly thought this was good enough to call it done. But now I have to show somebody else. And like, what if they think it's really stupid? Yeah. What if I'm wrong about everything?
Yeah, it never totally goes away, but you just find better ways of dealing with it or find ways to quiet those voices.
Or like sort of embrace them almost. I think for a long time I had this vision that, you know, like to be in a band where that's like your career brought with it some sort of like professionalization. And I have now come to just wholeheartedly reject that. And I'm like, this thing is kind of a mess. And I'm going to show it to you as a mess. And you will see that you might understand now that I don't know really what I'm doing, but but maybe that's part of the entertainment.
And at least it'll be true. At least like this is an accurate representation of where I'm at, even if it isn't where I wish I was.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Right.
I'm striving.
Yeah.
That's all you can do, really, is strive for the best.
And yeah, I think it also gets, there's sort of a flip side of the coin where you realize, oh, I thought I was so much further along than I am, and I have so much further to go. But there can be an excitement around that of being like, well, there is actually so much more for me to learn, so much further for me to take this. If you can feel energized about it, I think that can be a good feeling.
And talk about creating with friends. I mean, I would assume that it is a little bit easier to be in your little cocoon when you're just the three of you creating, and then maybe it's scary to show to other people, or do you feel a little scared to show even each other?
No, I think within the cocoon, I feel pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
But, which, you know, is a real testament to my cocoon.
You guys are so cozy together.
We are.
We really are.
Yeah, I think it goes like once you, because I think we're all kind of so on the same page about so many things. I feel sort of inherently understood. But yeah, you know, when you're breaking out beyond that, because I mean, a lot of times, you know, when you're showing other people, I found at least that with our music, whatever I think people are going to like is usually not the thing. Like, I feel like some of our biggest songs are songs that I perceived as like deep cuts. And I'm like, oh, not that one. You guys like that one instead. And so the fact that you like...
You can't predict these things. And yeah, that's sort of freeing, them. I think.
It's freeing, you know, because over time you basically embrace more and more like, okay, I'm just going to keep making what I think is interesting. And hopefully I'm not like totally missing the boat about what people like about my band.
But, you know, you've been following your instincts so far.
Yeah.
And we're still here.
Still here.
We're here at WFUV having a great time. So I think it's going okay.
Yeah. I think so.
Faith starts to enter the picture in yeah. a pretty big way.
Can you give me an example of a song that you thought was a really deep cut and became a fan favorite that you were really surprised by, or anything that your fans really latched onto that you, or even a line or something
that
surprised you?
Our song Weak in Your Light from our third record, Strange Disciple. I don't think it was released as a single. It's like the opening track on the album, and I love that song, but I did not think that it was one that people would be drawn towards. And now it's like, you know, the one that people most kind of sing along to live. The Wall and I from our first record is another example of a song that I did not think people would, not that I didn't think they would respond to it, but I didn't think that they would be drawn to it in the way that they were. It was kind of the first song of ours that took off. I'm doing finger air quotes. you really just truly never know.
I feel like you must have had some clue that Inept Apollo was going to take off, though. No?
That is one where I was like, I think this song kind of slaps for me.
It really does. And you must have known.
Oh, yeah. Although I had a different first instinct for this record. I really wanted the song In Your Head to be the first single. I was like, this is the banger. And we didn't put it out until like last week. But Inept Apollo, second close. Like, I really also love that song and is really fun to perform.
To be fair, like when she said In Your Head, I was like, you're insane. Like, there's no way. And that song seems to be doing very well, if you can believe your manager.
Let's talk a little bit about Under the Water, because I know you are going to perform that song. Tell me a little bit about how that one came together.
Yeah, that one, it was a very last minute addition to the record. We had actually had this the last day in the studio. I'm doing air quotes again. And we were like, wow, record's done. This is amazing. We get on a flight the next day to Australia to play some shows with Idols.
But before we get on the flight, Ian has this brainwave wants to finish this song.
I'm like, you know what? There's this song Under the Water, and I feel like it would go really well on this record, even though we thought we finished the record yesterday. And
we're all packed up, ready to go. All the gear's at the front door, and Ian's at his desk, and he's singing into the microphone, trying to lay down this last track of vocals. And the dogs upstairs catch it and get really excited and start howling along to Ian performing it.
Yeah, I'm like trying to sing. I'm like, hey, I think I can just bang out this vocal line and then we'll record all the synths like in Australia, just like after soundcheck or something. But every time I start singing, the dogs start howling and barking and it's getting picked up on the mic. And I was like, I was so frustrated. And so I ended up doing the vocals in like an Airbnb in New Zealand, just like sitting next to the bed on the ground. And then emailing them to our poor producer and mixer, Nick Milheiser, being like, I know you thought you were finished, but I got this song.
Let's get into the song, because we've been talking for a while, and that must have been a nod that the dogs were into it. It was striking a chord with the dogs, so.
I was frustrated at the time, but
it was
I should have paid more attention to what the universe was trying to tell me.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that it made it onto the album. We're going to get a live performance of Under the Water right now. It's Nation of Language here on WFUV.
Thank you.
live version of Under the Water from Brooklyn's own Nation of Language. That is a track off their new album, Dance Called Memory. It's your fourth full-length release, your first on Sub Pop. Congratulations. To me, that is like a really, really cool thing. Such an awesome label. Can you talk a little bit about whether that is significant to you, the label, or you're just happy to get signed for another record?
You know, I mean, Sub Pop is, for me, it was extremely exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're such an iconic piece of indie music history. And I think over the past few years, we had started to get to know a few people at the label because they would be at our shows in Seattle. And over time, we were becoming friends with more and more of them. And so then when our previous record contract ended, it became this kind of very natural. They were like, hey, would you guys ever consider putting out a record on Sub Pop? I was like, you know what? I think I would.
Yeah. You were very cool about it, but inside you were like, yes, thank you for asking me.
Yeah, and it's been so great so far. They are truly so motivated, and
they're music lovers, all of them. It's like a family in a genuine way. Special to be a part of that.
For sure.
I have a sticker on my desk, and I have many Sub Pop stickers throughout my life on many different things, and obviously many Sub Pop albums. So I feel like whenever I saw that a band was on Sub Pop, whether I knew anything about them at all, I would definitely check them out.
Yeah, that's like, I think they are one of those labels, which is, it's very cool to kind of join in that.
Yeah, that family.
That family, that tradition.
Yeah, that's really cool. And speaking of family, Nick Millhiser, as you mentioned, is kind of like fam. You've worked with Nick before. Talk about reuniting and how good it felt to work with Nick again.
I mean, it always feels great. He worked on part of our second record, and then we did all of the third record, Strange Disciple, with him, and now Dance Called Memory. And yeah, he's also just in Brooklyn, and each day we would just either bike up or take the bus, and felt like kind of like commuting, but in like a fun and good way instead of a bad soul-crushing way. And yeah, it's like he's a way of approaching recording music that makes it feel a lot like play, you know, and rather than a checklist, which it can sometimes feel like when you're in the studio, where you know you just have to like, we gotta get the bass done, then we gotta get the guitar done, and every part of it feels instead very creative, and there's a lot of potential for spontaneity. And yeah, we tried to keep it as exciting for ourselves as possible by, like, we would, you know, try to reach for synthesizers that we don't usually use, so that there's an element of, you know,
like, surprise for everyone.
Like, what's this gonna do if I twist this knob in the middle of you trying to play your synth line? And if it's cool, you keep it. If it's not, you start over. But just trying to create a little bit of chaos and discovery in the recording process is always nice.
I read that you wanted to combine these two different thoughts. It was like the dichotomy between Kraftwerk and Brian Eno, speaking of humanity and lack thereof. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I mean, I think for, you know, Kraftwerk is like a sonic foundation of this band, where like every synth sound that they make, I want to emulate. Every percussion sound, I want to emulate. But they did have this philosophy that they were trying to, you know, I think it was kind of a reaction to their times coming after like the hippie movement, basically, where they wanted everything to be very rigid and machine-like, because the idea of a machine making music was this radical thought, and synthesizers were fairly new, and they were kind of exploring new artistic territory. But now we have actual machines and robots making music. And so that makes me really sort of embrace this kind of opposing Brian Eno school of thought, which is you can make synthesizer music that is flawed and human and warm and you know, he would famously, like, when one of his synthesizers would break and he would send it to a repair shop, he would be like, fix this one thing, but don't fix these three other things that you will find are broken, because I like the unpredictability and I like having to sort of like wrestle with this thing to get what I want out of it. And so, yeah, we, you know, just trying to, as you're making things, think about, you know, with the rise of AI music, trying to inject as much humanity and
feeling
as possible into the music you're making, particularly if it's with synthesizers, which I think can often feel so opaque in terms of, like, as a listener, you're like, what's happening and what's doing what?
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely a lot of thoughtfulness and moving, stirring qualities in your music. And you do feel the humanity and you feel the struggle. And I think it's so interesting, too, about your particular kind of music, because it's very dancey, right? But it's also very sad at times. You know, so it's like you're dancing through the struggle. And I would imagine watching an audience do that is, you know, a really fantastic feeling.
Yeah, it is very moving, very stirring. And, you know, especially after we came out of pandemic lockdowns and, you know, were able to play shows again and talk to fans and see how they found the music and how they related to it. That was kind of the thing that a lot of people were saying, was that they're in this weird situation where they're stuck in their house and they want to listen to sad music, but they also feel like they have to, you know, get up and move because they feel so confined. And so I think that is sort of a through line throughout our records, is this sort of type of juxtaposition, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely, a unifying factor in just getting together and listening to music and rocking out together.
Yeah, it's the best.
It really is. It cures everything. All right, you're going to play us one more song before you head on out of here. And I just want to take this opportunity to say congratulations again for this record. It's really wonderful. I'm so glad to have new music from Nation of Language. And I hope to see you back here for album number 5.
Thank you very much.
You're on tape, so you must come back
now.
You're legally contracted to.
I love it.
All right, so this last song that you'll perform is Silhouette. And again, it is from Dance Called Memory. It's Nation of Language here on WFUV.
Give yourself up. I know it's you.
That was Nation of Language performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to the band for joining us in our studio and to Sub Pop Records. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, and James Higgins. Our FUV live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producers for this episode were Ina Volovich and Cadiz Salazar. Megan Suma is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV live sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday. Please rate and review the show if you like what you hear so other music lovers can find it. You can also catch audio and video of FUV live sessions on WFUV.org. FUV live sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host, Alisa Ali.